Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game here on NGSCSports.com, where we never stop. And of course, in studio, bringing it to you on a holiday edition of the Student of the Game, Weasel Wirt.
Yeah, boy.
Stephen Weasel Hurley. Chris Rankin, of course, our local hero, will be joining us shortly here. But more of a shout out, of course, this being Memorial Day today here, May 25th. 2015. Shout out to, of course, any and all servicemen within the reach, and women, I should say, servicemen and women.
Word.
In reach of the Student of the Game being here. Definitely a day to honor and appreciate your service. And you know, what I find interesting, I started thinking about this the other day. I wanted to touch on it too. How wrapped into the military culture sports in general are, and the NFL as well, right? I mean, not just the efforts that the NFL has in supporting them and working with them and things like that, sending players and coaches out to USO tours and stuff like that for troop morale and things like that. But you get the flyovers that happen at all the stadiums are all military exercises. I mean, that's basically why they do it. It's like, okay, we're going to fly over, blah, blah, blah. This is so that, basically, so otherwise, if you know, the explanation is if the NFL didn't do that, then, you know, they would just be planes sitting on the tarmac and pilots, you know, on simulators only, right? But on top of that, just all over the world, in a lot of cases, from what I hear, you know, my brother-in-law, for example, was stationed as a Marine out in Japan for a while there. And out there, they would still play a good amount of American football just between themselves and organized leagues within the military and things like that, kind of a way to keep their own culture alive abroad. So, you know, football definitely wrapped up into the military, all I could come up with is culture, but yeah, I mean, that subculture paradigm. Okay, paradigm, I know. I just like saying paradigm. It's silly. But, you know, so very interesting concept that sport is that mixed into the military lifestyle for me. Lifestyle, there's the word. Where was that earlier? I don't know. You know, whatever. But thank you again for your service, any and all servicemen here within the sound of my voice here on this Memorial Day edition of the Student of the Game. So with that in line, let's go ahead and get right to it. The big news here, look, I'm really, I'm going to say this. I'm just glad I'm not stuck talking about Deflategate again. Weasel, I'm sure you're over it too, though.
Little update.
Not yet. If you got something else, that's cool.
Just in general.
Because that'll blow my lead up. I just said we're not going to talk about it. You're like, well, I do have
Let's talk about it then.
Psych! What? What's that doing here?
What?
No, but the big news here, and this is kind of a surprise, because if you're connected to the Minnesota Vikings franchise, this date leading towards tomorrow's outside team activity event, whether or not Adrian Peterson shows up is a pretty big piece, because if he doesn't show up, it sends a pretty definite message. Well, a statement has been released by Adrian Peterson's camp saying that he will not, in fact, be attending the OTAs in Minnesota. He will be staying at Texas, staying at home during that time. Weasel, go right ahead.
If you had a 10-year veteran and say he's at good contract and everything, you know, is there all the time. If a veteran like that in a solid contract, sitting out OTAs, big deal.
Well, and there's many schools of thought here, because you're asking the right question. Part of the reason I think that any player, any player who's a veteran that's sitting out, like, for example, Eric Weddle of the Chargers, who is a safety, is holding out as well for a new deal with the Chargers. You're not hearing about that as much simply because he's not Adrian Peterson. Let's call that what it is. But is it a big deal? My response is kind of, okay? Is the veteran player in there hitting every play, running all the reps, doing as much, quote, as he would have as a rookie? The answer is no, okay? And let's keep it to the actual example, right? A guy like Adrian Peterson, multi-time Pro Bowler, broken 2,000 yards at one point in his career. I mean, I'll say this statement, and you tell me just true or false, Weasel, as a Vikings fan. Does Adrian Peterson have anything to prove to anybody that he is the best running back in the NFL today?
I think everyone knows that. It's like he is, I wouldn't call him the best running back, like, in general, but he's the best runner, I think, in the NFL by far.
We've had that discussion about his skill set, but do you want him on your team or Marshawn Lynch? That would be the question you have to ask people.
The only thing that I'm trying to wrap around is that Peterson right now, he has 2 years left in a three years left on a contract. The next one is going to be worth $12.75 million.
2015, right.
Right. Correct. Now, he is wanting, I guess, because of the whole thing, I want to be traded and stuff. His agent went with it and like, yeah, he wants to be traded. Come on, Minnesota, what are you going to do? And then...
what you going to do?
So there's no trade after the draft. And so the agent's now like, we want guaranteed money. It's like, okay, all right, but you don't have to. We don't have to because you're under contract. But it's kind of confusing here because, not going to the OTAs, I get it, but they're saying that if you don't do 90% of the OTAs or such, you're going to lose a workout bonus. He's going to lose $250,000 in a workout bonus,
right?
Which is bonus money, but yeah. he still doesn't have that guaranteed money, and they're saying from a long-time Peterson confidant that he wants to be traded and that he's going to sit out maybe for more guaranteed money or something like that, which is the thing is that Peterson has no leverage. It's like Minnesota could be like, you signed it, live it. And then, but it's, if he's still trying to get like, you know, get some guaranteed money, if he's still trying to do the whole, let's say guarantee money or I just want to sit out type of things.
Right.
He just, I just hope he like, you know, you just, you know, it's pretty much stop, dude. Just stop.
Yeah. And so the leverage piece that you introduced there kind of goes with the part of with the other part of a veteran missing camp. Now, I'll grant.
I'll say this. Brett Favre and stuff, he when he was with the Vikings or such, I think he was able to miss, like, all of the OTAs, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he's a really, really old veteran.
Michael Strahan did the same thing with the Giants on the way to the Super Bowl.
So people are saying, oh, no, it's terrible, and then they come back and have great years. But
right. And if you look at it from the standpoint of that singular player and his role in an offense, interacting with his guys, things like that, on the whole, I get that there's little risk there. Let me tell you why it's a little bit worse for Peterson. He has a shred, and just a shred, mind you, of leverage. That offense is not even close to looking the same as it looked when he last took a snap with the Minnesota Vikings, right?
With Teddy Bridgewater, he had a pretty exceptional year with the guy, the cheesy guy, Asiata.
Asiata and McKinnon.
You know, good, two good players, but they're not both combined, nothing near Peterson.
No, well, right. So. Yeah. And getting Peterson into that offense to not only interact with Bridgewater, get that timing right, teach these other running backs a thing or two, and introducing that, whatever leverage does he have? Okay. Oh, well, you know, the Vikings don't want to have a PR battle with the player on their hands. At this point, somebody who is seen in the public eye as a child abuser who has no remorse for it, the Vikings can't lose that battle, okay? So take that off the table. Oh, well, you know, we'll go somewhere else. No, you won't. Your contract's worth too much. No one wants to pay that money, and they're just waiting for Adrian Peterson to get released, okay? That's not going to work. I can't think of a single shred of evidence beyond continuity, like we were just talking about there, that Adrian Peterson's camp holds over the Vikings. It's just not there. So that for that reason alone, as you say, I'm with you. Dude, stop. You cannot win. Now.
I think one more thing is that
yeah.
The thing about it is the Vikings aren't going to screw him out of money. They want him to be their running back, and the trade, I guess, it didn't work. contract had a lot to do with it, I would say.
Yeah.
But the thing is that he's got these pretty much, it's like 12.75 million this year, 13.1, and then it goes up the last year, I believe. But I don't think the Vikings want to screw the guy. So,
well, no, I don't either.
They want more guaranteed money and everything, but it's just that the thing is that the Vikings will pay you. Just do what you got to do.
Well, yes and no. There's a difference between getting screwed over and a difference between and the Vikings playing by the rules. If he plays in 2015, he will get paid his 12.75 mil. I don't know that the Vikings will keep him after that. What Peterson's camp is looking for is guaranteed money, so in case he starts to decline after A, breaking the 2,000-yard mark, B, suffering another ACL tear, C, hitting the 30-year mark, and D, taking a year off, they're afraid they have the next Sean Alexander in their locker room, and they want to see what happens. Guess what? Adrian Peterson's camp is afraid of the same damn thing, and they want to try to get their guaranteed money in here to protect Peterson, so he'll at least have something if that is indeed the case. Of course, I see now that Chris has joined into the conversation here. What's going on, man? Let me go ahead and bring you in. I think you've been listening to this Peterson discussion a bit, have you not?
Yes, I have been.
Yeah, go ahead, man. Weigh in.
With these players that are over 30 skipping OTAs, I mean, it's nothing big. I mean, every year someone's been doing it, it seems like. So, the Vikings could be using them in camp. But with those younger guys, but I mean, with him skipping, I know. I mean, the toll of running back, especially at the age of 30, it's gonna wear us in. So I mean, with him skipping, and I think for him, health wise, it'll help. But for the organization itself, I think it might hurt them a little bit.
How do you think that'll hurt the Vikings organization? I don't see it.
Well, just as a team, as like you said before, with Bridgewater, Bridgewater coming second year with the timing there. Just the teammate, just to get the rhythm down for the offense.
Yeah, okay.
For him personally, it's not going to hurt him at all, I don't think.
Yeah, no, and you're right. That's kind of what we were getting at. So the damage, basically, Peterson can only look worse while the team just keeps looking, just keeps getting a little bit hurt. I mean, is that basically what it comes down to?
Right.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. That being said, gentlemen, I'm gonna open the floor of discussion. Possible landing spots for Adrian Peterson in 2015. Now, first of all, who here thinks Peterson's getting traded? I don't. Anybody else? I'm hearing no's.
I don't think he would. I think the Vikings should try to get some value for him, but. I don't think they would, because they'd rather have him on the bench than have some other team have him on some other team.
That's legit, Weasel.
Okay, so got a little quote from an article from thevikingage.com. So they were talking about Jerry Jones.
Jerry Jones.
Yeah, of course, he's got to say something.
Cowboys owner.
After the whole draft thing, and he said that the Cowboys, they would be willing to part with a future draft picks, and I think they said possibly a first rounder. That could be seen as offering a glimmer of hope that a Peterson deal could be reached. So Cowboys kind of selling the picture. Maybe they're going to wake up and be like, Derek McFadden, what was I thinking? So, and so I'm sure it's going to have to be a first round pick. I would think what I would think would be a first round pick, a conditional third round pick. And I'd say a corner like Maurice Claiborne.
Well, okay. That's cute. You're not going to get that. Now, here's probably the single biggest mistake the Vikings made, in my opinion, as far as Peterson's value. And you guys could tell me what you think of this in a second. But draft day has obviously come and gone. We're almost a month past the draft. And that's when I think the Patriots made their biggest mistake was draft day. The fact that on Thursday night, we didn't see a deal involving Adrian Peterson is probably the best opportunity for the Vikings to try to get something for him.
Yep.
But again, the draft picks means that in that trade, the team will have to pick up his current contract, which means they'll either have to renegotiate him, or having traded away a first round pick, cut him, or pay that contract that they don't want to pay.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of a lose-lose-lose from a business standpoint. Now, me, I don't have the latest on the Cowboys' salary cap. I have no reason to believe that it's great. I know they restructured Romo's deal, but they could still have a better cap life. I don't know. They got people in their front office who can dance around with it if it happened. What I'm trying to say is the reason why the Cowboys were the best option is I think Jerry Jones is aware that this is probably a quickly closing window in the Tony Romo era to actually get a Cowboys Super Bowl. He trades a first round pick, gets Adrian Peterson. Maybe they get him to renegotiate. Maybe they don't. But they get this running back in support of Jason Witten, Dez Bryant, and probably the among the best O-lines in the league talent-wise, and certainly the best one for their age in the NFL. That didn't happen here, and every day after there, the Vikings have lost value in Adrian Peterson as an asset. Weasel.
So, the window, you know, what you're saying is, you know, closing pretty quick with the Tony Romo. But one thing I said before, it's the Arizona Cardinals also should have been in the mix to get Peterson. All I got to say is Carson Palmer, old, and Larry Fitzgerald, getting old.
Yeah, and again, a legitimate point, but I think their cap situation is even worse than the Cowboys. So, again, good point, but let's call it what it is. They're paying Carson Palmer, regardless of the fact that he suffered the injury right after that. That notwithstanding, that was the move that killed them. So you could argue they made their mistake in the Peterson race far sooner with that contract. But I don't know exactly.
Pretty sad thing is that Carson Palmer, when he was at the Bengals, signed another huge contract. 1 week later, injured.
Yeah. So both
and then
times
same
signed,
this time
yeah.
it was like what 7 days or so, 8 days after. Boom. Yeah.
Yeah. Both times after he signed a big contract extension, tore his ACL. Yeah, that's a rough go right there. I don't know. But, I mean, what do you think of the premise that the Vikings made their biggest mistake by not getting rid of Adrian Peterson during the draft, Chris?
Yeah, I think that was a huge mistake. But really, I mean, they could still get draft picks for next year. Not moving up. I mean, they with Asiata, their running back, it wasn't much of a need. A lot of people like their cornerback pick in the first round. I think they should have gone with a receiver there. Moving Peterson, maybe get back in the first round and pick up another receiver. Yeah, maybe, but really, I mean, I don't see much of a difference in them moving it then than moving them now, really, because I can still get some draft picks and some money for next year to build up.
And I think one thing about if you're a team like Arizona, if you're a team like the Cowboys, your first round pick's going to be at what, number 25 or so?
Pretty high, yeah.
So the thing is that I don't call that first round picks, of course, they're important and all, but being in the back of the first round and you're going to get a guy like Peterson, yeah, I would go for it, but that's just me.
Well, right. And I mean, in the back part of the first round, that pick is oft used. It wasn't in this draft. But it's oft used to trade down to get multiple picks in the lower level for guys that you're more compelled by in your research, right? Theoretically. So here's where I want to take this. And I don't do speculation a lot on this show. But let's say the Vikings' worst case scenario happens. Peterson is just unwilling to budge. His agent, we should say, is exactly as dumb as Weasel thinks he is. And the Vikings are forced to release Adrian Peterson. Don't shake your head. No, that could happen.
Nah, they ain't going to release him.
That could happen.
Nah.
It's not outlandish. I don't think it'll happen, but
I think it's very, very unlikely.
I would only give it one very.
I'll give the chance it'll be that 0.00001% chance.
Oh, come on. You're not that naive, are you?
I was referencing Dumb and Dumber.
I know. So you're saying there's a chance. Anyways.
There you go.
You're welcome. I got you. No, but so we mentioned the Cowboys and Cardinals already. Let me throw this one to you first, Chris. In the worst case scenario Vikings event that Adrian Peterson gets released, where should he go?
Yeah, that's a good question. Where should he go? I'd say maybe the Cardinals is where he should go. They have the most cap room for him. The Cowboys don't have a lot of cap. The only cap they cleared up was to sign the rookie free agents that they were drafting. So that was basically their whole salary cap is there. So they don't have much as the Cardinals do. So I would go to the Cardinals if I was him. But then again, the Dallas Cowboys offensive line's probably better than the Cardinals. So he'd probably get more yards there and maybe have a better chance of getting there.
What about,
you know what I mean?
What about, and I mean, I know we talked about the Cardinals and Cowboys earlier. I want to kind of take it outside of that because we already know why both those teams are good options. They're playoff teams with quarterbacks that need support. Playoff teams with quarterbacks that need support. Well, there's a team I have in mind that may not have been a playoff team last year, but has a whole lot of playoff experience of late, two Super Bowls specifically, that had the most success when they had a viable run game. And, of course, that viable run game at the time was a committee in Earth, Wind, and Fire. Ahmad Bradshaw, Brandon Jacobs. Oh, crap, I just lost the third guy. Damn it.
Bradshaw, Jacobs.
Derek, no, Ware.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's his first name? Damn it.
Not Andre.
Not Andre Ware, no. But anyways.
Derek, I believe it was Derek. Derek, yeah.
Derek Ward?
Yeah,
Derek Ward.
Yeah, I did have it, okay. Yeah. I said Ware, I meant Ward, whatever. Derek Ward, Brandon Jacobs, Ahmad Bradshaw, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Now, I'll grant you, when it comes to Adrian Peterson, you're not going to get the same kind of blocking. But I'll tell you what, if he goes to New York and plays for the Giants, I think that's a pretty solid 1-2 punch. Hell, the guy they had running the football, was that Rashad Jennings? Last year? He was
last year they had Rashad Jennings until he got hurt.
Right, and he was most famous being Mojo's backup in Jacksonville, you know, running plays when Maurice Jones-Drew needed a rest every now and again, carrying that franchise on his back. And he still delivered nice until Chris mentioned he got hurt. So if Adrian Peterson's in plays, look, not that Rashad Jennings is a bad running back, but Adrian Peterson, he is not. You have a 1-2 threat. Because they're worried about Peterson running the ball. Eli Manning's facing less pressure. He throws fewer picks. And the Giants actually have a shot coming out of a weaker division to make the playoffs. Weasel.
Also has a kind of pretty amazing wide receiver to throw to. Last year's offensive rookie of the year, Odell Beckham Jr. Now the thing about that guy is that the thing is you're going you're gonna have to have a safety on top of him. Because the guy's like ridiculously good.
Ridiculous.
And adding a guy named Peterson...
pour some salsa on
it's
it.
It's like, because I think...
you see, you missed what I did there. Victor Cruz. Oh!
I see. It's just the only thing is that Manning just wasn't, you know, he throwing interceptions, everything wasn't looking good.
True.
And then Beckham Jr. shows up.
Well.
Give him a running game with that? Holy crap.
Well, and there's something else to that, too. Like, Manning was doing decent when he had Jennings to hand the ball off to. He gets hurt. And the Giants' offense just isn't the same. So, Chris, as the resident Giant fan on the show, Peterson to New York, thoughts?
Yeah, it would be great. I don't think it'll happen. I don't think it'll go there. It'll fit the mold there for them, especially when the Giants went with an offensive tackle as their first pick with Flowers. So, they have the wide receiver. They have the wide receivers in place. They don't have the running back. There, I mean, yeah, Rashad Jennings, they do. The rookie they had last year as well. And then they also picked up running back. Then they pick up Shane Vereen from the Patriots also.
Yeah,
They picked up a Patriot running back. I don't know if it's Shane Vereen or Stephon Ridley, one of the two.
I think it's Vereen. I could be wrong there. Hmm.
So with them picking, you know, with that, you know, someone's getting released there. I don't think they're going to release the rookie they had last year in second year. I mean, he was decent there at running back. So, yeah, it'd be nice as a Giants fan to have Adrian Peterson there. I think it's a long shot, really.
Huh.
I mean, they do have the receiver talent there. with Victor Cruz and with Odell Beckham Jr.
Well, keep in mind, guys, if he gets released, everyone's going to be calling, blowing his phone up. I feel confident in that. The only teams that may not blow his phone up are teams like, I don't think, for example, that Jacksonville should be calling him. I think he would be kind of a problem to the cap and to what they're trying to build there. I could be wrong, but maybe they would.
Raiders are like, we have a lot of money to give you.
The Raiders might actually go for it. That's a legit point. And in that division, other than the fact that Peyton Manning's in it, you can mess around and do some stuff. Granted, you have to play the Chiefs defense twice a year, but, you know, in the North, where the Bears used to be a good defense, where you used to have to play in Tom McInsue twice a year, you know, I mean, basically that's another reason why Peterson should stay with Minnesota, is because that entire division has declined. Yes, I'm even including the Packers that won it 2 years ago with an 8-7-1 record. Basically the best you can, the lowest winning record possible to finish a division, and they had it to win their division. At least it wasn't 7-9, but at any rate, look, point is this. The NFC North is a diminishing division, in my opinion. And if Peterson comes back to it, who is the premier defensive lineman in that division now?
Lenny Nada's not bad.
See, but the fact that you have to list him as a possibility just shows how much of a decline. Now look, let's be clear on this show. I'm a Haloti Ngata guy. That is my dude. That is probably the single most respect I give to a Ravens player is one Haloti Ngata. All right? That's just truth. I mean, I don't have him here behind me like I do J.J. Watt. But, I mean, you know, maybe that's next year's Christmas gift, Weasel. I'm just throwing that out there. But
I would naturally say, I would say, you know, for the Bears, Jared Allen, I think he had a relatively quiet season last year. But this year, I think, getting a little ahead, but I believe he's going to be playing outside linebacker.
Yeah, you weren't here for Chris and I talking about that. That's actually a bad thing, okay?
We'll see.
He's older and has less speed, and they're going to move him to a position that needs more speed. It doesn't make any sense, and I'm willing to tell you that your wife is going to be really pissed off they did it, and she'll be right. And I already know Chris backs me on it because he's the one that made this point last week. So, isn't that right, Chris?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I said if you want to move him, I'd say try to get him to move the defensive tackle a little bit, then the defensive end. I think he'd be all right, Jared Allen, as a defensive tackle. Moving the linebacker is just a big mistake, and it's just opening up, especially when you still have Lance Briggs in that linebacker role there, too, that he's aging slow as well. I mean, I would just be doing tight end across the middle all day long.
Yeah.
That was the case.
Eric Edelman, go to work, you know. Kyle Rudolph will have lots of fun there in Minnesota now, you know. Martellus Bennett isn't in Chicago anymore, is he? But if he were.
No, he's still there. He's still there.
Okay, Martellus Bennett is going to get a lot of passes in practice facing off against Jared Allen. That's all I'm saying. Anyways.
And so there is there's an interesting thing about a Bears defensive lineman that was in the news most recently.
Oh, Weasel's picking up on my transitional point. Boom. And we'll get right to that transitional point that Weasel brought up after the break. You're listening to The Student Game on NGSCSports.com. You know, Weasel, in retrospect, it was probably a bad idea to pick that song after I did the after-the-break transition, because here's the thing. If I genuinely cheesed somebody off doing that, like, you know, when you're watching the show and, like, they'll cut away, be, oh, wait, we'll be right back. I'm like, ah, I'm on the scene. Then I play something that hypes you up to, like, play football and, like, hit people. I might have just caused some sort of real estate damage somewhere. That is not a wise play by me. And I will be careful to not do that again in the future. silliness. Anyways, you are listening to The Student of the Game. Here, the second half of the show, we open up talking about Adrian Peterson and company. And company as in his agent and the Vikings, I should say, and the whole negotiations therein. But keeping it in the NFC North this week, actually just today, matter of fact, for those of you who don't know, defensive tackle Ray McDonald, recently he was acquired by the Bears there in Chicago. 1 year contract. He had overcome some troubles, I think is a way to put it. I shouldn't say overcome. That's a bad word. He had dealt with some troubles in San Francisco. Eventually, it did lead to his release, where the Niners released him, citing poor judgment. He was a name that popped up when the Ray Rice video first surfaced as somebody who had participated in domestic violence. They were only allegations. However, at the time, the Niners did not suspend him as the Panthers did, let's say, Greg Hardy, for example. The Niners opted to not suspend him because he hadn't received any criminal charges and the investigation was incomplete. When the investigation was complete, the Niners did eventually cut him, even though he did not face charges from the Santa Clara court. However, fast forward now to today, 3:46 a.m., one Ray McDonald arrested for misdemeanor charges of domestic violence and child endangerment. So essentially, another arrest on his record for this. Now, obviously, an arrest is not equal to guilt, but with the current climate of the NFL, the Bears have opted to release one Ray McDonald. Weasel, I could tell you got something to weigh in this already. Thoughts?
Well, anything I'm thinking about this whole thing is that is he guilty of what the domestic violence or whatever it was? Is he guilty is one of those questions that you have to ask. Now, nowadays, if there is a team, yeah, it's not the season going on; it's the off season, and if someone accuses someone of a crime or they falsely make an allegation. I think what's going to eventually happen in the future is that someone's going to totally make up something, lied, and they're going to cut that player. The team is going to cut the player, and it's going to come out that, hey, he didn't do anything. The person made it all up. Now, how does the NFL handle it where if you punish a guy, you cut him for an action that you believe they made, and it ends up being all false? I think it's going to cause a problem in the future. So it's one of those things that I think it could happen. And someone's going to lose their job because of it. And the NFL is going to have to answer for it.
So, wow. So what you're saying is is this sets up a situation where if, you know, somebody, for whatever reason, who is an estranged individual dealing with a football player, doesn't even have to necessarily be domestic violence or any sort of romantic situation. It could be a shakedown of any sort. Hey, if you don't do this, I'll say you did this and this will happen and you might get cut. Oh, what you gonna do? That's something I hadn't thought of before you mentioned it today and you know, opening the show, like our doing our pre-show meeting. And that is a legitimate threat.
Because how is a NFL team going to respond to that? You cut a player, they were, you know, falsely accused. It comes out, I would say, weeks later,
right,
that kind of thing will happen. But the whole thing about, hey, you got in trouble, the NFL has a higher standard now, you're cut. And it's like, ooh.
Yeah,
I just see that happening. So
I don't know. Chris, do you have any take on that?
Not too much. You guys are even talking, already hit the point on it. With that, like what Weasel was saying about teams cutting them, it's, you know, like the Niners, they – we'll wait until the call came out before they suspended him, you know, so they didn't suspend him originally. So, yeah, I was thinking the same thing as Weasel was saying with the, you know, the allegations. And one of the false allegations, the guy gets stuck, and then, you know, you go from there. But
yeah,
not really too much else.
Yeah, I mean that's all the above is legitimate. Like again, let's make it clear, it's been stated on this show many times. This is what the fans have essentially asked for, is snap judgment. But snap judgment can't be made on these matters because no one really knows what happened except for the two people involved in a lot of these cases. And no, that's not just domestic violence. I mean, you know, it goes on and on. That being said, if I'm Roger Goodell, which I'm not, but if I were, or if I'm the, actually, no, scratch that. If I'm Damaris Smith, I'm the head of the NFLPA. I'm setting up a meeting with one Roger Goodell. I'm saying, look, Roger, for both of our sakes, the leagues and the players, we really need to enact a policy that says until an investigation comes to a conclusion, we cannot levy a decision. Now, what does that do? Oh, well, the player can still play and do all this other stuff. Well, not necessarily. If the team feels the need to, they can still suspend them, I guess, maybe. But the league shouldn't be able to levy punishment until after the investigation. Now, maybe Damaris Smith should be angling that the player can't be punished or suspended until after the investigation. I would do it in such that you take suspensions off the table, but you can levy a fine on a player. Because here's the truth. The teams, the league, no one should be wanting the players or being okay with the players getting bleeping arrested. You should be able to fine the hell out of them for getting the shackle slammed on them because, hey, there are morality clauses in your contract. Bottom line there, okay? And you make enough money, you get arrested. You pay me $5,000 in a morality fine or something like that. And then you at least get some kind of a punishment. And then suspensions aren't an issue if you're found innocent or there are no charges levied or however you want to play it. Who knows, if you really care, we'll even give you your $5,000 back. F it. Whatever. But the fact that snap judgments can be made sets up this issue, which is legitimate. Look, nobody in our income bracket understands what it is to be famous enough to be found and then possibly taken advantage of. We just don't know. So I couldn't tell you how real a problem this is, nor what the best cure for it may be. And again, I'm not saying this is true of Ray McDonald. We've kind of strayed from that a little bit. I mean, you know, what's the guy saying, liar, liar? Well, your favorite client requires some legal advice. Stop breaking the law, beep, hole. I mean, stop beating your women, beep, hole. Not, again, allegedly, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you know, I can't put it any simpler than that. Now, that being said, because the teams, the league, whatever, leave themselves wide open to some sort of recompense if indeed they bust an innocent guy. The right move is to let things take their course. Now, that being said, this being a domestic violence issue, and that being such a hot button that it is, and frankly should be in any situation like this. I mean, that's the good news. Is that domestic violence is getting the attention that it should, right? And not from TMZ Sports, okay? I'm still kind of disgusted that the TMZ Sports Department is a thing. If you've seen the Sports Symposium, my first in my video series, which the second one's coming out soon, but you know, I just specifically discussed the TMZ Sports Department and how that's a thing. That's a problem, and no other NFL commissioner or any other NFLPA head, Damaris Smith, has had to endure that. It's a completely different climate now. And I think among the changes that need to take place with issues like this is you find a way to hit them fast, but yet have their stories be told at the same time. And it's a tough compromise to strike. But this is what we've asked the NFL to do. We won't tell our court systems to punish this stuff better, to prevent this stuff better. We won't give support to you know, victims of domestic violence and things like that that should be given in a civil setting, in a government setting. We want the NFL to fix it. Well, whatever. If that's the case, that's what needs to happen, apparently, according to the fans. Of course, that's just my opinion. I could be wrong. That being said, Mary McDonald's been released twice. Due to this kind of issue, he has zero Pro Bowl appearances. Pop quiz. Has Ray McDonald play his last down in the NFL? Weasel.
I think it's all going to what the judgment is towards him. It just matters if it's a, if it's like a minor kind of offense, maybe he can come back. But if it's really serious and messed up, the Bears did, I think they reminded him, like when he signed a contract, is that, you know, you're under a microscope.
Sure.
You had an arrest before.
Sure.
And so I think both sides understood what needed to happen if he did get in trouble again.
Sure.
So there, I'm saying there's a chance that he can come back.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yep.
Okay, fair enough.
Yeah.
Chris, has Ray McDonald play his last down in the NFL?
Yeah, I agree with Weasel about it depends on the outcome of this right now. It's not looking good on it. If the charges are there, then yes, he has played his last down. But if for some reason that, you know, or whatever, he doesn't, that he's not convicted of it, then there's still some teams that could use a defensive tackle in the league with some experience to be a veteran guy. So I'd say it's I'd say no, just because of how the outcomes have come around lately anyway. So I'd say no.
Here's the reason why I say yes. Because you guys make an excellent point. The outcome of the case is, of course, an important and determining factor in all of this. And as long as he's under investigation, he's already a toxic asset. I'm willing to bet that this will not be solved before the start of the 2015 season. So that's off the board, okay? Let's pretend that he is found not guilty, or that this charges. I won't say that they find proof that this charge is trumped up, because that completely changes the game. That's the one thing that would make my statement untrue that I'm about to say. He's done for 2015, definitely. I think 2016 is up for debate too, because it depends how fresh this domestic violence issue is in the psyche of the NFL fan base and the media in general and all that other stuff. With Ray Rice still being talked about because now he's officially eligible to join another team if someone so desires and yada, yada, yada.
Cowboys.
Well, to Weasel's point, and also a point that is backed by our writer, G. Steele. Find him on Twitter at G-W-S-T-W-E-L-I-O. You may remember him a few weeks back, right, Weasel? He wrote an article, not this week, but last week, about the Cowboys' willingness to roll the dice. You know, you got McFadden, you got Lael, the offensive lineman.
In the draft?
Yeah, he wasn't drafted because he had issues with the Lael Collins. That's it. Boom. There we go.
Their second round pick. Is
Randy
it Gregory?
Gregory was the next one I was going to.
And then Hardy.
Of
you got him.
Then Greg Hardy would be the creme de la creme. There you go.
So, but
and so why not add Ray Rice is kind of Weasel's point.
The thing is, you'll still get he's a serviceable running back. Maybe. I think at one time he was, like, at least in the fantasy world, he was top three and in the NFL. And he's an all-around good running back. So I think Peterson, you get the running, you get the and stuff like that. With I think with Ray Rice, you get a more complete package, and it's going to cost about $400,000 to get him.
Well, yeah, and
really cheap.
And that's a fair point. Yeah, to get him at a flea market price is certainly a big deal.
And I'll just say this: that the when this happened for him, I think it was 2012 or 2013 for Ray Rice.
Yeah,
that about right. 2015.
Yeah.
It's been enough time, and in between, he got married, and he's been, for all purposes, he's been clean. So,
well, I'll say this
that we know of.
But Ray Rice was notarized or had notoriety, I should say, as an offensive player, and then a one-time elite offensive player. He was starting to decline before these allegations even happened. I believe I made a joke on the show about Ray Rice being on the back of a milk carton because no one's seen him lately, you know. But if this is still a fresh issue, I don't know that McDonald is somebody that people instantly get picked up. Or if he does, will he be a starter again? I don't know. I don't know.
I think
he's definitely done for 2015. Weasel.
Yeah, all I'm saying is with the it's just if you sign a guy like, you know, they signed Greg Hardy, and you kind of know some of the issues that he was having, and so you ask him, what lately have you done to get better or to, you know, work on this? And with him, you don't really know, but Ray Rice, it's been a while. The timing in between is, I think, years about when it happened, and he's been a clean record from what I know for the past couple years. So I just see that as...
He didn't hit his wife again. Congratulations.
Hey, this is if he's going to come back. I mean, I was just saying that it's...
I'm just letting you know what the devil's advocate to
the... Oh, yeah, I got you. I know. But it's the kind of thing that, you know, he made a... You know, it was a huge mistake on his part.
Yeah.
And very costly.
That was very hotels.com for you.
Hey,
well done, Captain Obvious. Anyways, we should work on them as a sponsor as much as we drop that bite. I'm just saying. Anyways, let's jump to the next topic. And that is, I'm going to go a little out of order because I think this one is more interesting, especially considering Chris's awesome Twitter handle, at Hydraulic Upright, UPRITE. 15 yards is now the spot from where you kicked the point after attempts. Chris, thoughts?
I don't think it's going to make much of a difference. An extra point, I mean, it's one of those things like, yeah, you're going to get it. I mean, it was 99% of them made last year, something like that, from the 2-yard line. That's why they wanted to move it back. I don't think that far is going to make it back, make it much of a difference. Who knows? Maybe teams will try to go for 2 now since it's still at the 2.5. They'll go from there instead of the spot. Or, you know, you might even see some more field goals from 15 yards out because it gives you a little more space back there to have your players run behind the defense, because you know the defense is going to try coming a little little more now since the ball is, you know, starting at the 15-yard line. Was it a 33-yard field goal now? Basically, or a 33-yard extra point?
Let's just call it 30.
Right, so with that, the defense might be trying to come a little harder, which is going to open up. I'll be surprised how many. I won't be surprised how many extra points are going to be faked. They just go for 2 from the 15-yard line because you're just opening that up because the teams are going to come more at it on the extra point now. Because before, like, oh yeah, the kicker only takes one step to kick the ball, you know, whatever. But now that's a little further out. The teams might be trying to press a little bit. I'm kind of anxious to see how many fake extra points there will be this year.
Weasel.
New 2-point specialist from the Philadelphia Eagles.
He won't even make the roster.
Tebow. Just saying. Now, well, anyways, I think I like the extra point moving back. It's the kind of thing that every single time you see an extra point, the score is like, what, 28 all or something like that, and then you have an extra point. Done and done. 30 yards out isn't exactly it should be for a kicker an automatic field goal, but the thing is if there's pressure,
because it's intrigue.
Yeah, it's the thing is I've always seen extra points, except if you're Matt Prater and with the UCF Knights. Yeah, that happened. Yeah, so that awesome kicker can kick really far in the NFL. Yeah, missed an extra point in a bowl game. Just saying. Your face, okay? Your face.
The problem with Prater, though, is extra points are too close. He needs them more than 50 yards.
Oh, that's true. Can we kick it from the 40? I'm sure you could actually do that.
I don't think there would be an issue with you lining up further back, right? I mean,
can we line up at the 25-yard line? Can we have the ball placed there?
It could just be a really long snap. No!
You have 2 snaps.
I got it. Right. You snap it to one guy who then does a backward pass to the guy who's the holder. The holder places the ball down, And then Prater boots the hell
you
out
get
of it.
Two, well, if you snap it to another long snapper, it's a snap's kind of like a backwards pass.
That's what I'm saying.
Long snap, long snap. Bam, 40-yarder for the extra point.
It doesn't have, you don't even have, it doesn't have to be another snap. It would just be snap and then thrown again. And, I mean, all that distance, you know, the people rushing the passer, they're not going to get there as fast as a guy can throw a ball. So as long as everybody holds on to the ball, Prater opens fire. It could work. But for bringing up the Honolulu Bowl, oh, I'm sorry, the Aloha Bowl.
Charge on.
Anyways, no, but here's the thing, and I like the point that Chris makes about the fakes and the more the NFL wants to encourage people to go for two more. I think that not that I can blame them, and while I'm a member of Chris's camp, though less vehemently, I at least let you say Tebow into the microphone. You know, that's a great little tidbit as well. You know, to start getting specialized players for point after attempts is actually a very compelling concept to me, believe it or not. That being said, 99% of field goals were made. That's true. Point afters were made. That's true. Here's the thing. Taking just field goal stats, and I have to credit this to Eric Casilius. This is from whom I heard it, because this news, it's a little old. This is what goes back a couple weeks, but we hadn't talked about it yet. So, 99% of PATs were made. What percentage of kicks down the middle of the field from the 30-yard distance, how many of those were made? Any of you guys know that percentage-wise?
I didn't think of that.
No? And nobody else? 98%.
Yeah, I was about to say like 97%.
98%. You're doing all this for a 1% more chance of intrigue.
I think in the back of your mind, I think it'll be different. It's different.
Well, and you're bringing up the point of, well, will it get overthought? Maybe. I mean, we saw what happened in the Pro Bowl where they did the thing with the narrower uprights that even birthed the hydraulic upright concept of Chris's Twitter handle and all this other stuff. Pneumatic goalposts and whatnot. He shanked two kicks just by a narrowing of the goalposts in a Pro Bowl game. You have to think psychology is going to get involved here somehow. That makes sense. But then again, the logical stance of when they kick from the 30 in the middle of the field, they make it 98% of the time. Personally, all I know is for the first few games, what we've guaranteed is maybe people will watch us play more. I don't think so. But I don't know. I don't think they're going to get rid of the point after. I don't think it's a good idea to do so. But, yeah, right now, this is an interesting first step. I'm glad they did it. I don't think it has any impact. I think that's where I'm at.
Well, I think it's something to... Something to keep an eye on would be what percentage are made and at certain times, because you're essentially making a field goal as a game winner, a 30-yard field goal for a game winner at times. You're going to have a kick that used to be, 13 yards away or so?
Ish.
And you're turning that into about 30 yards away, so it's a chip shot type of thing, but I think it's just going to be in a different mindset for those kickers, so...
Yeah, I mean, I get that. That makes sense. You know, like I said, I'm glad they did it. I just don't think it's going to make that big a difference. So, anyways, next item I wanted to bring up here, kind of close out the show. Jim Schwartz, former Lions head coach and former Buffalo Bills defensive coordinator, has been brought aboard to be an officiating consultant. In other words, he's going to give the refs a coaching perspective of certain situations and rules. Chris, let me throw this to you. Do you got an opinion on this?
With Schwartz going to officials, I just thought it was funny when I saw the headline just a little bit ago. That he's working with the officials because, I mean, he's the one that had this couple of those stupid calls on there, like throwing a flag when play can't get challenged anyway. And
oops.
It could help out for the game of football itself with it, because you're getting someone that was on the other side of the line, you know, seeing things of what things should be changed, opposed to, you know, the officials that are only really officials that haven't played the game or coached the game. So it could help out, but I just thought it was kind of funny that I was short, so I was the one that was working with the officials.
Weasel.
Mike Piera. I hate that guy's face. I hope we get to hear from like Schwartz or something, because him, every time he starts talking, I'm like, oh my gosh, this is embarrassing.
Well, Schwartz isn't exactly a classy guy either in his past, but I mean, you know, and I'll put it this way, and Chris makes a good point. He was the ref who got hit with a 15-yard penalty for throwing a flag on a play that was already reviewable. And if I remember correctly, they blew the damn call anyway on said review. Because he was down by contact, if memory serves, Justin Forsett of the Houston Texans on Thanksgiving, and they let him have the touchdown anyway. So, yeah, there's that. Also, something else worth significance that took place in Jim Schwartz's tenure as a Lions head coach, anybody can think of it, involves a prominent Lions player. Weasel, don't look at the board. No, not Ndamukong Suh. Prominent Lions player, more prominent than an effing defensive tackle. Maybe some guy named Calvin Johnson. There it is.
Yep.
I say Calvin Johnson, everybody's like, oh, that catch. That thing is 5 years old going into this season. And everybody still knows it as the Calvin Johnson catch. So for him to have been on the sidelines for what is not only arguably a coach screw-up and what is definitely a ref screw-up that's happened another time since. Yes, Dez Bryant was a catch. And you can't tell me otherwise because the rules have already told me that it is. Shut up. But I think the reason why, as much as I may or may not care for Jim Schwartz as an individual, philosophically speaking, I think him being in place as an officiating consultant is a good thing, because it tells me that somebody may be in there advocating for the correction of this catch rule. It's just stupid.
Now, is it everywhere that you have to, I thought it was only the end zone, technically, that you have to come down with the football, or is
that
it the whole field?
That is just one of several points in the contention of the writing of the rule of what is or is not a catch.
I think it's the easiest way, I think I would look at it, is all it has to be is catch 1-2. If he's got the ball during those two steps, if he's got it, it's a catch.
Okay. Here's the reason why it can't be that simple. I have the ball in my hands. I take my two steps. Do I have control?
But you have to have control of the ball.
Okay.
It's, of course, I mean, that's kind of part of the play. Like, if you have a wide receiver going up the middle, when they look at the film for it, they have a guy, he's going to get a brutal hit. But the guy does 1-2, catch, two steps, then gets hit.
Beyond
hit. Beyond. And the thing is what they judge it by is if he took those two steps, and did he have control of the ball, and if he gets hit, it's a fumble. So, but it's in the end zone, it's different. They're treating it differently. So, one place it's a catch, another place it's not. That's kind of not
so
good.
I'm so confused.
Yeah.
I don't know. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to go ahead and cut that off here, because show's about done anyway, and let's call it what it is. This conversation could take another at least 15 minutes by itself, I'm sure. But until next time, folks, I am Kyle Nash at the SOTG on Twitter. Chris Rankin on the phone with us. Thank you for jumping in, sir. I was about to say the wrong name. Hydraulic, not pneumatic goalpost. Hydraulic upright, U-P-R-I-T-E on Twitter, of course. If I'm a man, Weasel, where's Stephen Weasel Hurley at Weasel the SOTG. Excellent show, guys. Appreciate it. Thanks for checking in. And hope you had an excellent Memorial Day holiday. Until next time, my friends, class dismissed.